Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event, from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to your favorite Saturday morning program, heard exclusively here only on WEEB. I am Steve Woodward, and with me here in the studio is David Hensley. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, everyone.
Together, we formed the most formidable morning team in all of talk radio in Moore County and beyond, potentially. I would like to begin, as I always do, by acknowledging our wonderful sponsor, The Marketplace Restaurant and Catering. Since 1980, your go-to for fabulous breakfast and lunch options, as well as catering for every catering event, from the office party to the wedding of the century. The Marketplace, since 1980, on Highway 211 in Pinehurst. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we must immediately... we've had a in-flight turbulence. Please remain seated with your seatbelt fastened at all times, even when the seatbelt sign is on. We had a pretty knockdown drag out to arrive at our public enemy number one this week, but at the end of the day, when the smoke cleared, it was pretty obvious. In fact, there's been a lot of smoke in the area I'm about to discuss. Public enemy number one for this week's show are the Charlotte, North Carolina Democrats. Their hamstrung law enforcement personnel, hamstrung in many cases by their sheriff, who has long been an antagonist of any kind of immigration enforcement. And so what happened was, as you surely know, unless you've been on a round-the-world cruise, the Department of Homeland Security, after successful initiatives in places like Los Angeles and Chicago and Memphis, sent... personnel, armed personnel, ICE agents, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, to the Queen City of Charlotte earlier in the week. They swept in, and lickety-split, within 48 hours, they had arrested, I believe the number was 44 illegal immigrants with criminal records, violent criminal records, in fact, including things like rape and other physically violent activities. And then over the period of days, they have managed to arrest more than 250 illegal immigrants, according to reports by the media. Meanwhile, what's the Charlotte Assembly doing? They're calling a special meeting because, by golly, they want to pass a resolution that demands that ICE, when they detain and arrest these people, must immediately inform the overlords of the city of Charlotte of who they have detained and arrested. Now, this is particularly rich because the sheriff of Charlotte, Mecklenburg, and his name escapes me and it doesn't really matter, but he has specifically refused to detain illegal immigrants and hand them over to ICE for months and months and months. And now these people, with the shoe on the other foot, want full cooperation on their end from ICE. And ICE, of course, told them to take a hike.
I think that the Queen City City Council needs to study the supremacy clause of the United States Constitution is what I think needs to happen. But my guess is the people of that form the City Council of Charlotte couldn't find the Constitution. Like, they probably don't even know it exists.
And of course, you have the normal. The normal lies and half truths coming out of these Charlotte elected officials. Same thing you heard in Chicago and Los Angeles, which is our city is very safe. In fact, crime is down. That, of course, does not eliminate the threat that these illegal immigrants pose just from being physically present. They don't have to be committing a crime every day of the week to be the problem. It's when they do commit the crimes, they're usually violent. They usually involve rape. They involve firearms that are improperly held.
It doesn't matter. They're here illegally. They're criminals. They're taking our resources. Our schools are overcrowded. Our bus routes are too long. It's all because of the illegal aliens we have here. We don't have a teacher shortage. We have an abundance of illegal aliens who've invaded our schools and caused a teacher shortage.
Well, and that was evident by some of the empty classrooms. Before we get to that, it was, of course, no time flat before far-left members of the United States Congress up in Washington decided to voice their displeasure with the deployment of these personnel from the Department of Homeland Security into Charlotte. Let's play this incredibly treasonous clip one.
I'm Senator Alyssa Slotkin.
Senator Mark Kelly.
Representative Chris DeLuzio.
Congresswoman Maggie Goodlander.
Representative Chrissy Houlihan.
Congressman Jason Crow.
I was a captain in the United States Navy.
Former CIA officer.
Former Navy.
Former paratrooper and Army Ranger.
Former intelligence officer.
Former Air Force.
We want to speak directly to members of the military
and the intelligence community
who take risks each day
to keep Americans safe.
We know you are under enormous stress and pressure right now.
Americans trust their military.
But that trust is at risk.
This administration is pitting our uniformed military
and intelligence community professionals
against American citizens.
Like us, you all swore an oath
to protect and defend this Constitution.
Right now, the threats to our Constitution aren't just coming from abroad,
but from right here at home.
Our laws are clear. You can refuse illegal orders.
You can refuse illegal orders.
You must refuse illegal orders.
No one has to carry out orders that violate the law or our Constitution.
We know this is hard
and that it's a difficult time to be a public servant.
But whether you're serving in the CIA,
the Army,
or Navy,
the Air Force,
your vigilance is critical.
And know that we have your back.
Because now, more than ever,
the American people need you.
We need you to stand up for our laws,
our Constitution,
and who we are as Americans. Don't give up.
Don't give up.
Don't give up.
Don't give up the ship.
Of course, that harkens back, don't give up the ship, to, I guess, the Revolutionary War era. Now, let me ask you a question, David, because when I hear this, I immediately think that these people are calling for treasonous acts by these representatives of Department of Homeland Security. As one yourself who wore the uniform, would you have ever contemplated a defiant act of not obeying the orders of your either direct report or the United States Army or the Commander in Chief in the White House? Did that ever cross your mind?
No, not once, regardless of who was president. But here's what I found interesting about this whole whatever you want to call it, commercial, is a couple of things. One, as you said, it's encouraging troops to commit treason, which is like punishable by death, right? But then going further past that, you know how we've all known that they put all these sleeper cells, you know, they embed all these bureaucrats, and that's one of the reasons why Trump version one failed, because he had all these people working against Trump. So when Trump came in this time, he cleaned house. You got to weed out all those people. I mean, Clinton did it, Obama did it. For some reason, Republicans never do it. You know, Obama had a big purge of generals. Biden had a big purge of generals. The other thing that I find interesting, so, this whole you need to stand up, you need to stand strong, what they're doing is they're encouraging their embedded activists to commit treason. That's 100% what this commercial is about. But the other thing that I want to point out is the viewpoint. We know this is a difficult time for public servants. We know that it's stressful. Wait a minute. You know, you don't have to follow an illegal law. Okay, time out. We just went through a period, like a 20-year period, starting with Obama and ending with the beginning of Trump, where almost everyone in the federal government, military, civilian, was not promoted based upon merit. They were promoted illegally based upon the color of their skin, their gender. It was 100% violation of the Civil Rights Act. These Democrats, these leftist congressmen and senators had no problem when they were telling military people and civil servants to violate the civil rights laws in the U.S. Constitution and promote people based upon superfluous stuff like the color of their skin. It's illegal to discriminate against that. They had no problem when that was the policy. Now that the policy is, we're going to promote people based upon merit. We're doing away with favoritism. We're focused on war fighting. No more social engineering. Now these leftists come up and they're trying to activate their sleeper cells to sabotage and to commit the administration and commit treason against the U.S. government. But they had no problem when the actual illegal orders were happening.
Correct. Absolutely.
Because they were the ones issuing the illegal orders.
Yeah. And the other extreme that has come to light during this period of time in which there have been federal agents in both Charlotte and then ultimately by midweek in Raleigh as well, which has similar numbers of God only knows how many illegals in the streets lurking in the shadows.
When they make it to Moore County, I'm firing up the pig cooker.
There you go.
We're gonna have a barbecue for them.
There you go. Yeah, it'll be complimentary, and they'll be attracted like flies.
Correct.
To you know what. So the narrative that has been pushed in Charlotte during this period of very successful rounding up of illegal immigrants has been that, of course, the agents are scaring the families and the children. They're afraid to go to work. They're afraid to go to their favorite local restaurants.
Wait. The people who came here illegally and drug their families here illegally are afraid to go outside because they may get deported because they're here illegally. This is who we're supposed to have sympathy for.
Exactly. But here's the thing. There is no chance in hell that these Department of Homeland Security personnel were going to go into the classrooms or raid the schools or the cafeterias. That was not their agenda for this Charlotte's Web operation. And yet, in Charlotte schools on a given day during the height of this initiative, you had 21,000 absentees on a given day. Total enrollment in Charlotte is 145,000, so do the math. That's a pretty significant number.
15%,
yeah.
Maybe.
That was just, you know, on one day, 21,000 absentees. And then in Raleigh, the Wake School system was advising students and their parents that they had permission to stay home from school if they were afraid to come to class. So, again, they were ginning up this false narrative that these children were potentially going to be swept up in these raids in the classrooms, which is never going to happen, was never contemplated by Kristi Noem or any of Tom Homan or any of these people in charge. But to realize how insane it is, listen to this teacher from a Charlotte elementary school. Play clip two.
My homeroom class typically has 16 students in it. We had four.
District-wide, there are 145,030 students enrolled in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools. On Monday, 30,399 were absent, 28,136 unexcused. While CMS doesn't break down the numbers by ethnic origin, Gillespie, a multilingual teacher, did.
Children of parents from Angola, from Vietnam, but the students whose parents come from Latin American countries were the students we were missing. So that was kind of the line, even among the ML students, is that we were missing Hispanic students.
So that's a tacit admission that he knows he's got a certain number of kids in his classes who are children of illegal immigrants, which doesn't mean, again, that they should be dragged away in the dead of night. But it does underscore, and this is probably a sort of a secondary outcome of this initiative, is that this just underscores the growing number of illegal immigrant students in our public schools. And, you know, at some point, it's going to have to be addressed, I would think.
Well, so let's, couple observations on this. First of all, 28,000 students is $476 million a year. So Assuming that those are all illegal aliens, I don't know that I can make that assumption, but, you know, a good portion of them are. That's $476 million a year that the taxpayers, the North Carolina taxpayers, are paying for illegal aliens just in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools,
right.
$500 million. You know, I've tried twice. I tried under the Levy chair, and I tried under Chair Calcutt to get more county schools to estimate the number of illegal aliens in our schools. They refused to do it, and I couldn't get the school board. Benway was against it. Davis was against it. Calcutt was against it. You know, my motion went down 5-2 both times because, of course, you know, we couldn't order the central office to actually do something because, you know, the board, the central office, anyway, that's a whole other story. But anyway, we don't know how many illegal aliens there are in Moore County schools, although I tried, as I said, twice to find out, and it was voted down. But Lee County has about 20% of their school, their students are illegal aliens. Charlotte-Mecklenburg appears to be around 15%. I personally think ours is in the high single digits, you know, let's say 10%. And let's say it's 10%. Well, that's... $27 million that the taxpayers are paying in Moore County for illegal. That's essentially all of our local funding is going to pay for illegal alien students.
That's real money.
That's real money.
Yeah.
It's, the other thing I would point out is let's take, we hear about the teacher shortage. We hear about the bus driver shortage. We hear about the how long the bus routes are. We hear about the overcrowding of our schools. If 15% of public school students in North Carolina are illegal aliens, you got to ask yourself, do we really have a teacher shortage?
Yeah, exactly.
If you think
you're... Because that's the easy answer, right?
Yeah. If you think that you're... Right, we have a teacher shortage. Well, how many teachers are we short? Oh, we need 8%. Well, 15% of our students are here illegally. If we got rid of the illegal aliens, we have a teacher surplus, right?
Yeah. Suddenly, yeah.
And maybe we have enough bus drivers. You know, our bus routes would be smaller. Our class sizes would be smaller. The fact of the matter is, as I and conservatives have been saying all along, these illegal aliens are consuming resources.
You'll recall in 2024, a long shot candidate out of Wake County ran for North Carolina Superintendent of Public Instruction, losing ultimately to the Democrat, Mo Green. But Michelle Morrow has some insight into this. Play clip three.
It was 28,000 students did not show up for school on Monday. You have to ask yourself, does that mean that there are 56,000 illegal parents that are right there just in that one school district?
Yep, that's
and
what it means.
And for your listeners that don't know, North Carolina has 115 school districts. And Wake is now the largest. We've actually surpassed Mecklenburg for the number of students that we have. And they sent out a notice saying that they were going to be doing online learning for those students that were scared to come to school. And they were wanting to help the parents to basically hide their children. This is the point. Correction is actually painful. And we all know that. And what President Trump is trying to do is he's trying to correct the last 20 years of the Democrats flooding our nation with people that don't want to be Americans.
Again, a very good point. I mean, this has been a 20-year trend, and now the chickens are coming home to roost. We've got a jam-packed show today, and I want to...
Let me say this real quick.
Please.
I really think, although you made the very accurate point that ICE is not going to go into schools and start dragging out students and teachers. That's just nonsense.
And they're not going to go
like
into going into yards and nabbing landscapers. In fact, the one false narrative that it was used regarding apparently I guess it was Chicago where they claimed that they went into a daycare center. And this is in a column that I'm about to reference in the pilot. They say they went into a daycare center and nabbed this woman who's an illegal immigrant. She drew them to the daycare center.
They always leave out
the
facts.
She fled to the daycare center so that they would
be
forced to apprehend her there, even though she had no affiliation with said daycare.
Right. right, right.
So it's a setup.
So, right, they do all this nonsensical. But the bottom line is schools are not sanctuaries. There is nothing in the law that makes a school a sanctuary. There's nothing in the law that exempts school personnel from federal felonies for hiding and facilitating an illegal alien. It's against federal law to facilitate an illegal alien coming here or staying here. And although, DHS isn't going to go after teachers and all this other stuff, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the federal government and DOJ go after school boards and administrations such as in Wake County who are taking overt steps to facilitate those that they know or who are illegal aliens staying in this country. That's illegal. And I think the Woke County School Board and the Woke County administration is getting horrible legal advice. You know, you have these law companies who specialize in educational law. And I think they sometimes get a little, tunnel vision and think that, just because there was a legal decision 50 years ago that the current Supreme Court's going to rule the same way. And these people are living in the past. And there's, whether it's Woke County or Charlotte-Mecklenburg or someone else, there's going to be a school board or a school administration that's going to learn a lesson the hard way by the U.S. Department of Justice, because it's against there is no carve out for school for public schools, and it's illegal to facilitate the staying of an illegal alien here. And my guess is, and it wouldn't break my heart if Woke County or Charlotte-Mecklenburg School Board got indicted or the administration got indicted for violation of federal law.
Sure. Maybe it could even have happened in Moore County.
Let me say this. It'll happen in Charlotte. There are places much, much worse than Moore County. We are saints compared to the nonsense that Woke County pulls.
Yes. Well, speaking of sainthood, we find out very often that there are fewer candidates for that in our own little hamlets right here in Moore County. In fact, I often say that I envy the people who come here for their golf trips and their tourism experiences.
Is this where you're announcing your candidacy for the school board?
No, but this is where I say I envy these people who pass through here and get to enjoy all of the beauty and the charm of Pinehurst and our beautiful golf courses, because they have no idea the total crap that's going on under the surface, all of the mischief and corruption and everything else. Point in fact, this week's public embarrassment number one. For any of you who pass through the village of Pinehurst, daily or frequently, you have noticed that for a period of time, which is now nine months, there has been disruption in one major thoroughfare through the tiny village of Pinehurst, down on the end where the Magnolia Inn is. Use that as a reference point. And this is a stormwater infrastructure upgrade project that started in February of this year, February 2025. It is now November, and it's not completed yet. And in fact, it may or may not be completed in the next several weeks. The point is that a contractor was hired, signed off on by the village of Pinehurst. And for the next 9 months, the merchants in that vicinity of this project have suffered greatly. One merchant estimates a loss of sales revenue north of $100,000. Needless to say, there is a great gnashing of teeth in the land as this has gone on and on and on. I can report to you that a public records request has been filed with the village of Pinehurst to learn about all of the correspondence that went into the steps leading to the hiring of the Ascot Corporation, which is the contractor in question. That public records request is ongoing. I can also tell you that a number of merchants have coalesced to get in the faces of the Village of Pinehurst Council, which has been more or less indifferent toward this, as has the village professional staff as well.
Wait. So these merchants are banding together to get this addressed, right?
Yes.
Is one of those merchants named Pinehurst Corporation? Pinehurst Golf Corporation?
You would be incorrect, sir.
That's why the village council doesn't care, because they answer only to Pinehurst. Hence, yes, the short-term rental law.
And many of you may be aware that there's a small cabal of individuals in the village of Pinehurst who operate what can only be referred to as sort of a shadow government, where they convene to determine the future of this village, how to preserve and protect the village of Pinehurst from the evil, that evil word called progress and tourism. It's my understanding, and this is the word on the street, that the contractor that was chosen for this stormwater project happens to be the brother of a member of the shadow government of Pinehurst. So you can't make it up. It's like Little Chicago, you know. So we're going to find out a lickety-split here how the bidding process played out, if it played out. And then, assuming that maybe that was done above board, why in the world did they find the one contractor that can't do this job? This project was scheduled to start in February and end by the conclusion of March. That was what was presented to the merchants. That came out on official emails from the village of Pinehurst. They were told, beginning of February, end of March, lickety-split, we're done. You got new infrastructure. You got your stormwater drainage problem is over and done, and here we are. It's still going on. And you still got trenches in the streets of Pinehurst. You've got a road closure on one end of the village there.
I bet you that if that road was leading to the Pinehurst Resort, that they wouldn't be having this issue.
You know, it kind of does. You would take that path to go down toward in the direction. Let's see, where would that take you?
It would take you towards the brewery.
Yeah. No. Well, anyway, but it hasn't disrupted any Pinehurst Resort business.
Right,
let's just put it
that way. Because if it did, then, like I said, they own. I would hate to be an independent retailer.
But think of that
in
little
Pinehurst.
That parallel corridor to the main drag of Pinehurst. On one end, it's bookended by Dugan's Pub on one end, and on the other end, by the Dewberry Resort Wear retail store on the other end.
Yeah, the VGA is down there too, right?
And in between, you've got, you know, the Nico Sushi.
Yep.
You've got the Carolina Philharmonic. You've got the child and infant bump and baby store. Many other places. I could go on and on. The Old Sport Golf Shop, etc. So that is in process and underway. We were going to keep an eye on that story for you, but currently that definitely ranks as public enemy number one. Now, meanwhile, as if things can't get dicey.
Let me know when you get a copy of that contract. I'd like to review that.
I will be
part of the review committee. How's that?
Yeah, I'll hand deliver it.
Perfect.
Preferably to your luxury home. But anyway, in case you missed it, there's more malfeasance going on potentially. The Daily Haymaker, our buddy Brant Clifton, who is the intrepid reporter from which you can run but you cannot hide, he has determined that leading up to the recent municipal elections, there were candidates running for two Pinehurst Village Council seats. There were three candidates. There was Lydia Bosch, a former council member and a fine registered Republican friend to many of us. And then there was sort of an interloper, an outsider from the D.C. swamp named Kevin Fitzpatrick, who was a unaffiliated guy. And then there was another Republican named Jeremy Hooper. And Hooper and Fitzpatrick seemed to be somewhat aligned on their policy viewpoints, specifically with regard to their contempt for short-term rentals. So they prevailed, by the way, on Election Day, 2-1 over Lydia, unfortunately. But leading to that, a member of the village council, his name is John Taylor, he was elected in 2023, Brant Clifton, the Daily Haymaker, has uncovered and has visual proof, screenshots to prove, that 116 people received emails from John Taylor, who used his Village of Pinehurst email address, a government email address, to openly support and encourage people to vote for Fitzpatrick and Hooper in the days leading up to the November 4th election. Now, that is not, you know, punishable by life in prison or, tar
but
and feathering.
But it's still illegal.
But it's unethical and
illegal.
So needless to say, that is on the radar now, and we will see where that goes.
What did you say that guy's name was?
The council member?
Yeah.
John Taylor.
John Taylor. That dude is so beige, I can't even place the name.
Well, he was elected 2 years ago along with Barb Ficklin, and they're part of the new council that is, hell bent on protecting and preserving and building moats and walls around the village and such, so on and so forth. So, anyway, that I just wanted to mention that because it has been reported by the Haymaker, and
it just shows
you the hubris. You know, you put somebody behind a council seat. And the next thing you know, it's, things that apply to thee do not apply to me. And that's usually the way it goes. I wanted to bring to your attention another D.C. swamp creature who has infiltrated our fine hamlet here. And occasionally he is permitted to write columns which are published in the Pilot.
That's a lot of red ink you have on that column.
So I made an assertion that if I were to sit down with this column and a red pen, that by the time I was done, it would look like the Electoral College map on the morning after the election when Donald Trump swept to victory.
There's a lot of red ink on
there. And this thing
there's
is
a lot of red ink.
There's so much red ink on this thing, I feel like I'm looking at the federal government balance sheet. But anyway, he wrote a column dedicated to refuting a column by our fellow Republican, John Rauerdink, who writes occasionally for the Pilot as well, in which Rauerdink, gave Donald Trump's administration some pretty high marks for accomplishing quite a bit. And anybody with an objective viewpoint of this would agree with that. Unfortunately, Mr. Hart decided to go point by point, and I have to say, when I read this, it felt like something that a high school senior pulling an all-nighter to finish a homework assignment might have done, or perhaps conveying the logic of an author that's on his fourth beer came to mind. But for example, let's take the border. He says, is our border more secure? Well, certainly there are fewer people illegally crossing our border, but every poll has the majority of respondents objecting to the methods used by ICE, which we referred to earlier, discussing Charlotte, arresting so many individuals. For example, federal agents in Chicago raided a daycare, handcuffed the teacher in front of toddlers, and threw her through tear gas on her. Is that acceptable? I give Trump a D on border security. Now, let's talk about that. Okay, step one, he closed the border. Step two, he is now deporting millions of illegals who are already here, not arresting them haphazardly, but arresting them very deliberately. And now we've had, 1.6 million self-deportations on top of the others that have occurred? And then you look into the facts on the so-called daycare raid. In fact, the agents in Chicago were pursuing this woman who is an illegal immigrant with a record. She led them to a daycare upon which they arrested her. So she was not a innocent woman working in a daycare caring for the children, which is, of course, the narrative that the columnist would have you believe. Okay, catch this one.
Wait, can I comment on this?
Yes, of course.
So, I mean, this is a typical leftist. This is a typical leftist. So he starts off saying, I'm going to give him a grade on border security, right? Then he says, well, the border might have been improved a little bit. What do you mean a little bit? We have 100% security over our border. Then he says, but I'm going to give him a D- on border security because of this made-up story, right? Then Trump does, like, he absolutely secures our border. This clown leftist says, I'm going to give him a D on securing our border because he handcuffed and tear gassed this teacher in front of her kids. And it's a complete fabrication. That's what leftists do. And by the way, you see Josh Stein doing this.
Oh, absolutely.
All the leftists, once ICE shows up in a state, it's amazing to watch this. The leftists melt down real time. Josh Stein, who's normally unflappable, it's so frustrating because he just sits there with his buck-tooth grin, right? Mm-hmm. But now he's actually showing how stupid he is, and he's doing press releases, and he is parroting these lies.
He's trying to win the empty suit award that was formerly held by Roy Cooper as governor of North Carolina. So now we go to the next one, inflation. Trump's tariff policies, says the author Jim Hart, are causing inflation today that will only make matters worse down the road. Neither gasoline, electricity, food, or housing is cheaper. Trump would get a D minus on this one. Okay, let's recite the lies here. The cost of gasoline is objectively lower across the board.
It's demonstrably lower. But, I mean, I can point to where it's lower.
But remember that gas prices are determined state by state, depending on which states have high gasoline taxes. If you drive from here into South Carolina, you're always going to pay less for a gallon of gas because they don't tax gasoline in South Carolina.
And while you're there, you can get a brisket sandwich while you're filling up your tank
Bucky's.
At Bucky's.
Yeah, exactly.
With low price, low tax gasoline.
But objectively, gasoline prices are down, and there are many factors, including the fact that the United States has regained its energy independence. Okay,
record
electricity.
Production, by the way. Right now, the United States oil production is at a record high.
Exactly. Now, to put electricity costs at the feet of a presidency, I don't care who's in the White House, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, state utilities, as we well know, control electricity costs, period. So that shouldn't even be in the conversation. Food. Are you kidding me? Look at how food prices have declined across the board. Look what they're saying about the cost of a Thanksgiving meal this year going
right.
down from a year ago.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Substantially.
Yeah. Okay. Now, here's another one. Housing is not cheaper. That's a lie, because the high cost of first-time housing is fueled by the Fed's refusal to cut rates. You can't lay the cost of housing at the feet of Donald Trump or any president.
Plus, we have 30 million illegal aliens here competing for housing, and that has caused increased rents. It's caused increased property values. Get rid of 40 million illegal aliens, and rents will go down. Food prices, everything will go down because you'll have fewer people competing for those resources. It's economics.
Yeah, and so he gives Trump a D minus. But let's just also point out that J.P. Morgan, among others, forecasts that in 2026 inflation will decline all the way down to as low as 2.4%. Meanwhile, wages are rising. The September jobs report, which was delayed until a couple of days ago because of the government shutdown, shows that earnings are up 3.8% year over year. 3.8%. That's not insignificant. So earnings are, wages are rising, inflation is going down. Ultimately, I think you're going to see that the tariff impact on the day-to-day lives of people will be very null, to say the least. Okay, here's another one. The war in Ukraine continues with no end in sight because Trump is a puppet of Vladimir Putin. The president earns a grade of F.
This guy's okay. Got dementia. It's 180 degrees. I know a few things about Ukraine.
I would argue that this is Biden's war, always has been, and that if there's an F, it belongs to Joe Biden, Lloyd Austin, and Anthony Blinken, who never took one step or lifted one finger to meet with Putin, to try to bring an end to this war, even so much as a ceasefire. Not one effort was made. They let it rage on.
What's this clown's name?
The columnist is Jim Hart.
Jim Hart.
38 years in Washington, D.C. as a lobbyist.
Oh, wait,
and,
like him and Tom Beto. Did he lobby for 3M like Thomas Beto?
And he was chief of staff to four U.S. congressmen. Jim Hart, I looked it up. They were all Eastern Democrats, okay? So you can't make it up. You need that context to understand what we're reading here.
Let's look at Ukraine, and let's look at this Hart clown. So here's how Ukraine unfolded, right? Obama was president. Putin invades Ukraine. Biden sends nothing to Ukraine except blankets. Did nothing. Then Trump gets into office. So Putin invaded the Republic of Georgia and Ukraine when Obama was in office. Trump gets in office. Putin doesn't invade anybody. Nobody, not a
Correct.
Soul. Trump sends Javelin missiles. Remember that, Javelin missiles to Ukraine, and sends all kinds of arms to Ukraine during Trump v1. Then Trump fraudulently gets voted out of office through a stolen election. Biden gets into office, and guess who invades Ukraine?
Hello.
Putin.
You got it, brother.
Putin. And then, it didn't go as Putin thought, And why didn't he go as Putin thought? Putin thought he'd catch Kyiv in like a week, and he got to the outskirts. But you know what stopped the Russians, Putin? The javelins that Trump gave them.
It stopped him in their
because
tracks,
right? And so then the Ukrainians got the Russians on the run. Every step of the way, Biden was slow to give the Ukrainians what they needed. If Biden would have given them the aid that the weapons that he eventually gave them over 4 years, the Ukrainians would have chased the Russians out of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. What happened was the Ukrainians had the Russians on the run because of the Javelin missiles and the other weapons that Trump provided them. The Russians were on the run. They asked Biden for more stuff. Every single time he hesitated, he waited. He waited too long. It gave the Russians time to dig in. Once the Russians dig in on the defense and plant like 500 million landmines and this and that, this is Biden's war and it's Obama's war. You know, that guy could not be more wrong. The only person who gets an F here is this clown.
And the only argument that's worse where Biden did even less is the subject of the Middle East, Israel and Palestine. Okay. He writes that it's way too early to tell if there's peace in the Middle East. The agreement is very fragile. No one knows for sure how it will hold together. On a related note, Hamas has released the live hostages and those deceased they could find. But what about the hundreds of hostages held by Israel? Those hostages are called terrorists.
Right.
They're Hamas terrorists.
That have been convicted.
They're not hostages. They're prisoners for a reason. Because
right.
they pose a threat to Israel. He gives a Trump's administration a B- on the Middle East peace initiative. Now, keep in mind that under the Biden administration, there was no initiative.
There was
not so much as a meeting with Benjamin Netanyahu, maybe one. I don't know. There were certainly no visits to the Middle East.
During the Biden, no. See, this guy could not be more wrong. Again, during the Biden administration, Biden's policy, just like Obama's policy, was to support the radical Shia regimes of Iran. So Biden gave money to Iran. Iran took and gave that money to Hamas and to the Houthis and all of their little proxy people throughout the Middle East. It was Biden and Barack's policy that brought all this war to the Middle East. If Biden and Obama hadn't given money to Iran, Iran wouldn't have been able to fund Hamas. And Hamas, look, everyone loses sight. What was October 5th, October 7th?
7th.
Yeah. 7th, where Hamas invaded Israel and killed 3,000 Jews, 2,500 Jews, almost 3,000 Israelis. Let me say that again. Hamas took the money that Biden gave money to the Israelis. The Israelis, Biden and Obama gave money to the Israelis. Biden and Obama gave money to the Iranians. The Iranians gave money to the Houthis and the Hamas. Hamas invaded Israel and killed 3,000 Israelis, which started this war. The Houthis started sinking ships off the coast of Yemen. And this is Trump's fault? These people are deranged.
And I won't even get into, we're going to save this for another show, but the Atlantic magazine has taken this whole insanity that we read in the pilot and done an entire December issue entitled The Coming Election Mayhem, in which they basically say Trump's plans to throw the 2026 midterms into chaos are already underway. By the way, I think I have once again reiterated in the most painful, excruciating way possible that when I say I read the pilot so you don't have to, I really mean it. And I think that column that I waded through and I went through a couple of red pens.
That's a lot of red ink.
I tell you what, brother, it was not fun. All right, so we've covered all those important topics. I want to get in the time that we have remaining to the excellent work of the Republican North Carolina State Auditor Dave Bollock, who was just elected, about a year ago. In 24, and he has sprung into action. We now have an auditor who actually audits things. I know it's incredible. He is now discovering that through the most recent report by his team, that the North Carolina State Health and Human Services Department is leaving hundreds of positions vacant. Why? Because this generates millions of dollars in lapsed salaries that the agency uses to fill holes in its finances.
This is starting to sound familiar.
Bureaucracy is being placed ahead of the needs of North Carolinians, Dave Bollock says. Taxpayers in North Carolina expect state agencies to provide services to the people, not to let job openings stay vacant so budgets can be buoyed. In other words, they're using this as a sort of a slush fund to make up for their financial impropriety and incompetence. That's what they're doing. So you can call it whatever you want. I think slush fund is a tidy word. Responding to the auditor's findings, of course, the DHHS says that that it abolished more than 500 positions in 2024 to free up funding to raise pay for 4,000 other positions, that they're doing nothing wrong. But, of course, they've been caught red-handed, and now we're going to see them tap dancing now that this audit report, it just came out a couple of days ago around the 18th of November. So it's just fresh meat, red meat for you. But, Mr. Hensley, I think that this misuse of funds that are supposed to cover employment of that are supposed to cover the operations of an entity are instead that are being funneled into paying for salaries. Where have we seen
doesn't
that?
Doesn't that sound familiar?
Where did I read about
that? Oh, wait. I think you've heard me mentioning that with Moore County Schools.
Why? And, by golly, I think you're right.
I made the observation, and yes, the accusation that, well, it's a fact. All those unfilled positions at Moore County Schools, Moore County Schools gets to spend that money elsewhere. And, let me give you an example. So according to Nick Paserno at our joint meeting, I've tried to find this information out. I've gotten stonewalled, so I'm going to use Nick's numbers. I'm not sure where he got them because the central office certainly hasn't given them to me. But anyway, Nick threw out that, local funding's supposed to pay for buildings and maintenance, and the state pays for, the operations, the teaching and all that. So Nick said that Moore County Schools has created 400 positions and use local funding to pay for those 400 positions instead of using it to pay for buildings and stuff. Okay, well, it's actually worse than that because here's what they do is, and there's reasons why they do this, but Moore County Schools takes all the empty positions and shifts them to local funding, and they take the positions where we've actually hired people and they shift that to state funding. So all those 400 positions that Moore County Schools used to justify those $35 million or whatever it is of local funding, most of those positions are empty. Like literally Moore County local funding, most of it is going to pay for unfilled positions, which then creates a slush fund that the central office can use for their projects. You know how I've always said, it was like, people are crying crocodile, we don't have enough money for our schools. And I've always pointed out, every time the central office has a priority, there seems to be money for it. But when a school board member has a priority, there's not, like the school board can say, here's our list of priorities. There's not money for that. But the central office has a list of priorities. There's money for that. You got to wonder I can tell you where this endless source of money comes from. It's these unfilled positions. So yes, Moore County Schools, intentionally or not, is doing that exact same thing. They are using the unfilled positions, that amount of money, which is substantial, and they're using it as a slush fund.
And getting back to
I'm sorry, yeah. And it makes you got to ask the question, right? So are they really in that big of a hurry to fill those unfilled positions, like SROs and teachers and all of this, because, A, their slush fund would go away? I would contend, no, they're not really trying to fill it. And as evidence, there's an initiative to increase class sizes. The school board and the central office, not me, but the central office actually wants to increase class sizes in Moore County schools, and they have the support of five of the school board members to increase class sizes. That doesn't sound like an organization that really wants to hire all those empty positions, does it?
It certainly does not. And for those of you who may be new listeners to this fine program, I guess I should reiterate probably every time we get together that David is a member, a second-term member of the Moore County Board of Education. So he speaks with tremendous authority on these topics, and that's why we are able to cover them so comprehensively, unlike anyone else.
I can't wait to set the record of duration of years on the school board. I need to find out who's the holder of that record.
They're saying about you what they say in Washington about Trump. He's never going to leave. He's never going to leave. I just know it. They're panicking.
There are three things that need to be fixed, and I'm not going anywhere until those are fixed.
Well, I'm going to stick around and to watch because I can't wait to see what happens. Believe me. And of course, just to close the loop on this story with Medicaid and the Bollock audit, remember why they have shortfalls in Medicaid. They expanded Medicaid to close the Medicare gap, Medicaid gap. Remember that? Well, guess what? They're $319 million short right now, even with renewed funding from the General Assembly. So they kind of dug their own little grave there, but we knew that was going to come up.
Well, you can never dump enough money in that hole called Medicaid.
You're absolutely right.
There'll always be a hospital executive who needs another $1 million a year pay raise.
So in the short time we have remaining, you know, as the week was winding down, President Trump signed a bill ordering the Department of Justice to release all of its files on sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, the so-called Epstein files. This was after all but one member of the House voted to advance the bill to the president. Now there will be a 30-day period before anything will happen further. It instructs the Attorney General to begin the release of the records within 30 days of the signing, so they give him that cushion. But of course, this has been discussed ad infinitum, and I don't know if this is going to be anything more than a bunch of emails with names redacted or not. If Donald Trump had anything to do with the criminal and seedy and kind of pathetic side of Jeffrey Epstein, I think we would have known about this about 15 years ago, of course. But none other than the great sage of Louisiana, Senator John Kennedy, had a few words to say about this topic. Play clip four.
And she's now on record texting Jeffrey Epstein about how to get Trump during a deposition while being a member of Congress. And this seems like a pretty bad activity.
Well, it is bad, and she needs to explain it. And we need the records to see the context of it. I don't know how many times I need to say it. That's why we need to do the full Monty. And I understand the president's position. And as Hardy says, there's nothing here. That's the reality. But perception is reality in politics and in government, especially when the American people, they trust so few people in the federal government.
That's that's quite a statement from John Kennedy, and he's got a great new book out. I recommend everybody should read it. It's called How to Test Negative for Stupid, and it is quite a quick read. It's hilarious. He's a hilarious guy, of course, and he's referring to, in that sound clip, he was referring to the member of Congress who was texting with Epstein from the floor. During hearings, yes, from the Virgin Islands.
Whatever happened to the Pound Me Too movement? I thought they were supposed to be outraged by sexual predators such as Epstein and Clinton and, you know, all these Democrats who go around the movie producer. Why? I thought they were appalled by these sexual predators.
Yeah, so did I. But hey, look at the time.
More fake outrage by the left.
We have flown through this this show today, ladies and gentlemen. We thank you for joining us, as always. We are going to go back to work. We're going to be detecting deceit and hypocrisy and rhino activities, and we're going to be back here. We're going to take a week off for Thanksgiving. We're going to have a special show for you for a week from now.
Our annual Thanksgiving show.
Yes, we're going to have a wonderful interview with two people from the Changing Destinies Ministry. So join us next Saturday, and then we'll be back in December. I'm Steve Woodward. He's David Hensley. Join us again when we do what we do best. We're
Taking Aim.